Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosque Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, Roofing, and Restoration. For service, call 444-7200. Our good friends, Bosque Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. Thank you for joining us today. I've got our good friend Paul Gessing in studio. Paul is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, and he's trying to keep us educated and keep us informed as we have a big election coming up on November 2nd. Paul's telling us all the things that are happening locally, and we don't have much of a list today except youth sports. We may be talking about camping overnight, ice skating, swimming pools, movie theaters, some of them getting a little concession from the governor and allowed to open a little bit. We've got everything from gun rights to labor agreements to raising taxes in San Juan County. Paul, you have got a crazy life keeping track of all of this.
It is very busy these days, and it is a challenge to keep on track, keep on top of everything happening. Of course, when one person is making decisions that are life or death for businesses and tell you whether you can take your kids swimming, take your kids bowling, take your kids to, you know, the fun center down the road, those are important issues and questions, and it's helpful to keep on top of those things. So that's what we're going to try to do here in the next hour.
Hey, I've heard there's good news that certain segments of our population can now go bowling.
Certain segments, yeah. It's actually been on military bases, legal, if you will, for quite some time. You know, the issue we have, and this is gets back to the founding fathers, not necessarily that they thought of bowling on military bases as the separation of powers, but basically the governor's ability or inability to tell folks who run the military base bowling alleys what they can do. So, yeah, if you have a pass to get on Kirtland Air Force Base or down at White Sands, I'm sure down in Clovis, I didn't do a survey of the entire state of bowling alleys, but bowling alleys for the rest of us are shut down right now. They have been since March 15th or whatever date that exactly was. And I hope they survive. I hope they can come back and I can take my kids over to those bowling alleys. But for now, you have to join the military or be related to a military person, get on the base, and then you can take your family bowling. And yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. It's kind of frustrating. But what I think the real kicker is, the real insight here, is that you have these facilities open right now. They are dealing with the same coronavirus world, the same population, broadly speaking, as other bowling alleys. What is the governor, what is her administration doing to better understand the spread or lack of spread of COVID-19 on those base bowling alleys? Are there problems with outbreaks from them? And the same thing can be said for casinos. If you run a racino or a state-regulated casino, most of them are associated with racetracks, but not all, then you are closed. You're still closed by the state. But Isleta, down south of town, Santa Ana to the north of town, not all tribal casinos are open, but they are dealing with COVID. They are, you know, they see dollar signs, let's face it. They know that they can do this. They're also under tribal rule. They don't have to kowtow to what the governor says. So they're open. How are the casinos doing? Isn't this something that our state, our governor, Dr. Scrace, et cetera, should be looking at and reporting to us? Because these things haven't been brand new. I mean, the casinos have been open for a couple months now. They should have some data and some experience they can help share with the rest of us.
I just got a text from a friend of mine that Sandia Casino actually has a bowling alley.
They may, but remember, the dollar signs with the...
Oh, Santa Ana. Okay.
That's Santa Ana and Isleta, both. I checked them.
Both have bowling alleys.
They do, but they're not open. Remember, we're talking about dollar signs here. And unfortunately for my kids and other bowling enthusiasts out there, the dollar signs of the casino are a lot bigger than the dollar signs at the bowling alley. And yeah, those are still closed. So even if they're on tribal land, I think in the immortal words of the now deceased Kenny Rogers, who checked out right as this whole thing was getting started, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And I think the casinos are saying, we're going to hold them for that casino money, but we're going to fold them on the bowling alleys and other non big dollar revenue raisers. So that's my hunch. I can't say for sure, but I know that those pueblos and tribes make a lot of money. I mean, gambling's like printing money for
those
folks.
Well, and Paul, let's talk about that. So here you've got a major, I guess it's part of the tourism of our city.
Sure.
Is, you know, the gambling and things that are available to people. But we've got people that are involved in youth sports,
yep,
you know, batting cages, coaching children. We've got bowling, you just mentioned. We've got ice skating arenas. Mm-hmm. We had a nice time talking with Mr. Hubbard, who owns the ice arena and the New Mexico Ice Wolves, and they haven't been allowed to open except for private lessons.
Right.
And it seems among all of these things, even bowling, going back to bowling, it doesn't seem like it'd be very difficult to social distance.
You got that right.
You can sit apart. You don't use the same ball. You can wipe everything down. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, as we've said from day one, the governor should set guidelines and procedures in place for everybody to adhere to, not pick and choose various industries. Camping is back allowed, thanks to the governor. I'm taking my children to a swimming pool later today. Up until now, basically, I don't remember when it started, but lap swimming was allowed. So adults, you know, no kid, no 10-year-old, no 8-year-old is going to get in the pool and do laps. I mean, maybe a few wannabe Olympians will, but not my kids. And so they have been essentially prohibited from swimming in a New Mexico pool since the middle of March. So just in time for fall, last Thursday, the governor said, regular swimming pools can now open to a capacity of 10. And again, even that doesn't necessarily make sense because there's really big swimming pools and 10 people. You can get lost in an Olympic sized swimming pool with 10 people. And then there's little hotel and apartment complex pools that have 10 people, and that's a crowd. So this whole thing has just been one frustration after another for me, and I hope for New Mexicans. I know the general poll seems to indicate that people are just saluting and going along with whatever the governor says. I don't believe it. I'll only believe it after November the 3rd. November the 3rd is truly the only poll that matters, and this election is going to determine the future of this state. And if people just blindly go along with what this governor is dishing out, then I guess we deserve what we're going to get out of it.
Well, Paul, you're talking about the election, the general election, and you do your best to try to provide us information so that people can be educated voters. Yep. Tell us a little bit about the Rio Grande Foundation and the resources you have available on your website.
Yeah, we deal with public policy issues in the state of New Mexico. Our bailiwick, our mission statement, if you will, is economic freedom. And, you know, that typically in, quote, normal times involves taxes, property rights, regulations, and those kinds of things. Obviously now, you know, we've got this whole lockdown situation. We're dealing with one person with the life or death of businesses in their hands. And it's just a challenging, frustrating situation. We, of course, look at constitutional liberties, and there's constitutional aspects of what is happening with the COVID-19 that I think need to be recognized. But there's also constitutional issues like what we just saw at City Council in Albuquerque here last night, where the council, a very liberal group of folks, actually endorsed and recommitted themselves to at least 6 of the 9 to, you know, gun rights and individuals' ability to own guns. And there were 2 bills at City Council that were defeated. One of them would have set up a regime of very micro control, kind of new regulations from the city. I don't think they were enforceable, but here's how you got to store your guns at your home. Very odd in the way that they were considering that. The other one was city property, city parks, buildings, all kinds of different facilities. Even, you know, a high-rise building with one tenant that's the city of Albuquerque could have theoretically caused that to be off-limit to gun rights. So those were both defeated, though, by solid majority, 6-3 of the city council, on top of a couple weeks ago, and we haven't visited since then, the city was considering a proposal to request the legislature amend the state constitution to allow local governments to restrict guns, and that was defeated 5-4. So some good news on, you know, constitutional liberty bread and butter issues right here in the city of Albuquerque, where you might not expect it typically. We've elected a pretty progressive group of counselors, but I think they decided that your Second Amendment is what it is, and they should abide by that.
Paul, there are societies in history, Jewish culture for one, where they tried to live by making up all these rules. There was a rule for everything. And I think that sometimes we get caught in that same thing. For example, I'm thinking parental responsibility to put your guns in a safe place so your kids can't access them. Parental responsibility to store opioid drugs in a safe place so your kids can't access them. Why is it that we have to have some law about that? Isn't that just common sense?
Well, you're right. It gets down to parenting. It gets down to common sense. And I'm not going to tell you I have an easy solution to that. Obviously, 98% of it involves you telling your children how to act around, whether it's drug like, you know, opioid that can be legitimately used to treat, you know, back pain or something, or a gun that can easily be used for self-defense, let alone hunting. It's something that we have individual responsibility for and should be made, you know, making that aware of the next generations, how they treat those very important but also potentially dangerous tools. And I'm also responsible. Now, politicians want to come in. Sometimes they have well-intended, you know, public campaigns, and those are sometimes fine and sometimes successful, whether it's on guns or littering. And I think we've had some success with some of those in terms of moving the needle on public opinion. Seatbelt use, helmets on motorcycles, all that stuff. Sometimes there's an educational component that can be had, but really it's just a matter of people not doing their due diligence as parents and raising their children correctly. And I don't know how to solve that problem in two easy steps.
You know, as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, what are all the dangerous things that we oversee as parents? One of the most dangerous is a car.
Yeah.
You know, pretty soon we're going to have a law about, well, you've got to lock your car keys in a cabinet and you can't, you know, take them out of there until 7 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, there's just going to be this plethora of rules that we have to live by. And none of that makes any sense. Car is probably the most dangerous thing that we all own that a child could get hurt in and around more than anything else. So
absolutely,
we learn how to operate a car safely. We train our children how to use them. I don't see a big difference between the other things we're talking about.
Well, and just to take it back to full circle with the COVID-19, I mean, if we had the same people in charge of cars that have been giving out the advice, whether it's state or national, with regard to automobiles, you wouldn't be getting very far in your car. You'd probably have some cars banned. You'd just not be able to go anywhere. You'd have to wear a crash helmet every time, and you'd have to wear bubble wrap all over yourself or something. It would be pretty ridiculous and uncomfortable to get into an automobile if you were still allowed to do it. So, yeah, the part of being in a free society and part of being of the political, perspective that I think we both are, and I think is flat out right, you know, for human society, that you have to have some personal responsibility over tools that can be dangerous or can be useful. And, you know, as you type away on your cell phone there, it's the same way. You know, your kid, not so much you. I know you're not a social media addict, but your children.
I'm doing a calculation, and here's what I was doing. I pulled up online how many people die in car accidents every day. You won't believe the number around the world.
Around the world? Ooh.
3,700 people a day.
Wow.
That's 1,350,000 people a year killed in car accidents. Well, that is way more than dying of COVID.
Yeah, it's real. And what I think is that individuals should be able to weigh the costs and benefits of their actions largely as they impact themselves. Obviously, anytime you walk out your door, you cough, you sneeze, you do something, you can affect somebody else. That's not to say that, I mean, in California, you shoot off a little firecracker to announce the birth of your baby, what sex they are, and you start a massive forest fire. And look, people do dumb things all the time, but government isn't the best at doing these kinds of things either, and regulating and micromanaging and trying to tell people what to do. So, I think the philosophy of individual responsibility and liberty is the most important thing we can all take from the philosophy that we address at the Rio Grande Foundation.
Paul, to wrap up this segment, I do want to emphasize one thing. You don't actually have a lot of criticisms for the governor other than one main thing, and that is that there's no transparency. She's not governing according to the way the Constitution says she should. Even the Democrats in the legislature, which are part of her party, are not really participating, are they?
Well, I have a lot of criticism about a lot of what is going on. I do think that the balance of power has been thrown off in New Mexico, and unfortunately the legislature did that. They gave her that power, not her, back in 2003. So Governor Lujan Grisham wasn't in office at all. And I do have the process is definitely of concern. And it's not that you're going to have the legislature meet every time and discuss every single aspect of COVID-19. You do need to empower somebody, but you also need to have tripwires, I guess is a good way to describe it, that the legislature comes back and says, do we approve what's going on? And do we take some responsibility? Because right now it is all on the governor. And I think that is a tough position. And it's something that I think we should acknowledge, that while I may not agree with everything that she's doing, the fact is that she is empowered. She is responsible for vast, important decision making all across our state. And often, I think she's doing so with limited information and, overstepping the bounds of the Constitution of the United States and the way it's supposed to be done, the way these decisions are supposed to be made. So I'm just criticizing the process, but yes, that is the main thrust of our criticism.
Paul Gessing is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, and they have tremendous tools for you, tremendous amount of information for you to educate yourself. May not agree with all of it, but it's good to read it. It's the layout is very easy to access. As in fact, all of the topics that we're talking about today, Paul provides me with links so that you can go in, click on our podcast site, and go in and research more. And he does a great job of providing bibliographical information about all of this. That's at riograndfoundation.org. Paul Gessing's with us. We're going to come back and not just talk about Paul and his knowledge about politics, but we're going to talk about homeschooling because the Gessing family's in the middle of that. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
How does KNKT mean business? KNKT is in the business of sharing the gospel. KNKT is also supported by local businesses who we, in turn, encourage you to support with your patronage. Here's Steve Ryman visiting one such business.
We recently had a chance to catch up with Buck Buckner, the owner of Rain Tunnel Car Spa. Here's what he had to say about doing business locally.
Hey, Budgay. Car Spa and other local businesses are joining forces to launch a campaign called Local First. It's a call to action to spend our hard-earned money with locally owned businesses. Why local? For every dollar spent at local businesses, the economic impact on our local economy is 3 to 4 times that of the same dollar spent at a non-local entity. With them, profits beyond minor repairs are exported. Local businesses reinvest in the community again and again. Local businesses are completely dependent on community support and thus have a much deeper tie to the neighborhood. Local businesses are as competitive as non-locals. They hire local, promote local, and operate with far less employee turnover. National tenants are not a critical piece of our local economy and arrive only years after local business success. Where are those nationals? Sports Authority, Marcello's, Borders, Raley's, Copeland's, Zia's. Poof. Gone. Legislators, along with American Express, suggest we take one day to buy local. Nice thought. Don't they know our local businesses operate 365 days per year? So think, act, and do local first. Shop local, dine local, wash local, bank local, construct local, search engine local, follow local media. And finally, to increase the coffers for an even greater Albuquerque, keep it local.
To hear your business featured on KNKT, email advertise@knkt.com.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
I so much admire you if you have high school or younger children. All of my children are grown, but I admire you during this COVID if you have children. And I know that everybody's just working so hard. Families are coming together and taking care of one another. And I know families helping families too. This whole, you know, virtual learning environment and things has got to be very difficult. I'm prayerful and thankful that there's so many people working as hard as they are. And Paul, I wanted to ask you, you've got young children, and you and your wife, you kind of handle the history lessons and the civics lessons, and your wife, you said, is handling the math.
Yeah, it's first and foremost, I wish that all families had the kind of resources and opportunities that we do have as a family. My wife, her job is a little bit less occupied right now, partially due to the COVID-19 situation. My mother, so the kid's grandmother, was a school teacher. So she is more than happy to step in. And, you know, my mom, when I was a kid, I would ask her, let's do X tonight, or let's play a board game or something. And more often than not, it was, no, I'm doing lesson plans. And so now she's back at it doing lesson plans. And, you know, it's a lot of work, but she actually really is enjoying herself. And then, yeah, I get to come in and discuss interesting areas of history, world history, American history, the Constitution, the battle and the Revolution, Revolutionary War. So we're doing the best we can. We're having fun with it. I think the kids are doing well as well. We try to keep them engaged with their friends and give them opportunities to recreate outside of the classroom, as they're no longer in school with all their friends, and they miss that. But it's tough. I mean, City of Albuquerque is doing quote unquote virtual schooling through the end of the year. Other districts are being more proactive. They're getting their kids back in the classrooms. Unfortunately, the governor doesn't want them back in every day during the week. Some school districts like Farmington had wanted to go back full schedule, but they were told not to by the PED. And you've got a lot of issues with the education system. But overall, it's going pretty well at the Guessing household. We fortunately have a lot of advantages, and I think we're working out all the bugs. But my 4-year-old is in preschool. She's going live and in person to school. And at that age, they're not really doing a lot of book learning. They're just learning how to interact and play with other kids and be productive. And that's going well as well. It's kind of funny because the poor teachers, they have to dress up in all this PPE out in front on the way in, and they look like they're from the movie Outbreak, when Dustin Hoffman back in the 90s or 80s, when they look like these, you know, space people. But once they get them in the classroom, it's a fairly, you know, normal preschool environment, and we're appreciative of that school as well.
Tell us about the lawsuit that was filed by Doug Peterson regarding public-private schools.
Yeah, well, there's so much going on in all this, and I had the pleasure. The Rio Grande Foundation has a regular podcast, so if you can't get enough of me, you can listen to our weekly podcast. We actually do two podcasts a week. TippingPointsNM.com is the website where you can find that and subscribe to it. But I had the pleasure of sitting down with one of the attorneys and talking through the issues with them, and they said, look, we are forced to comply with the same rules and regulations, occupancy, PPE, the whole nine yards, as the public schools, but we, the private schools, are allowed 25% occupancy. The publics are offered 50%. We should be held to the same rules as them. And so there's a lawsuit going on with that. But also, just in the last 24 hours, I don't know if you've even seen this, but the Trump's DOJ has set up an inquiry process to look into what's going on regarding private schools here, and whether it's a a First Amendment issue with regard to, you know, treatment of religious institutions, et cetera. So, yeah, it is one of just a plethora of things going on right now. And so we applaud the Trump administration for looking at this situation, because I think it's unreasonable. If you're going to set up standards for schools to apply to, comply with, you should do that the same way, whether they're a government school, whether they're a religious school, whether they're just a private institution, whatever it may be. You know, that's been our goal from day one, is set up basic rules and regulations for everybody and then let them comply with those, let them achieve them, not micromanage the situation.
Well, Paul, I'm going to point out one very big difference between every private school and every public school. I attended the Albuquerque Public Schools myself. My children, all five of them, went to Hope Christian School from the time they were in kindergarten all the way through high school. That, to me, was a very extraordinary experience, not only for me as a parent, because the other parents, we literally raised our children together. And you might have a classroom of 20 kids, but you've got four parents volunteering to help every day. They won't even allow, APS won't even allow that to happen. They won't allow parents because they've got all these rules or regulations. And again, I'm not criticizing APS because they're dealing with ACLU and this and that and all of these things that distract us from the point, which is relationships and caring for our children. So when you talk about social distancing or things at a private school, they would be much more effective. In fact, I'll tell you one of the things Hope has done, very innovative. They've got a couple of churches in town that are actually providing them classroom space so that they can spread out a little bit more and really, really adhere to, you know, the public health order. I mean, they're doing extraordinary things, and yet they have limitations that are imposed on them that are unreasonable.
Yeah, well, that's called politics. It's a plain and simple situation, and unfortunately, the people of New Mexico have seen fit to kind of abide by that sort of political management. I'm not saying that one party or the other has exclusive lockdown on politics and doing things for political reasons, but there's no doubt that our governor has taken a very political approach to this particular issue and numerous other issues in relation to COVID-19 and just getting New Mexico back to business and getting people back to work. And, you know, the unemployment rate, I know that's on the list of topics, but until we open up New Mexico, we're going to have a lot of people out there looking for work and not finding it.
Paul, when we come back, and I want to spend the last minute of this segment talking about this, please vote. Please educate yourself. Please get all the information you can. Paul's Rio Grande Foundation is a very reliable source. There are a lot of other, you know, you may have a pro-Democrat site. You may have a pro-Republican site. Go to the party's websites and read their platforms. Really, really look into it. I've gone in and I've looked at the Democrat platform for the state of New Mexico. And it's difficult for me, Paul, when I read that kind of thing, because everything is a right.
Right.
You know, you have a right to start for the Lobos. Well, not really, but that's really, that's really what it says. You have a right to a great job. You have a right to health care. You have a right to this. You have a right to that. And when I think about the practicality of what that platform says, is what they're really saying is, we have the right to demand you pay for all of this for us. And that's just not reality. There's not an unlimited money supply, even though some people may think that that's true.
Yeah, exactly. When it comes to these regulations, these taxes, all of the things that a lot of people in politics pledge that they want to see done, and then they say, go do that business, provide this benefit business, they think that there's a magical money tree out back of these businesses where they just go shake it and get off some money to go fund whatever government wants them to do. The reality is that those businesses, even in good times, often are struggling to get by. Nowadays, and we have regulations coming up for a vote today at the Bernalillo County Commission, they are trying to impose things that are going to further harm businesses, taxpayers, and just the economy overall of, in this case, Bernalillo County.
Wow. We've got a lot more with Paul Gessing this afternoon. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Here's Ava, the owner of Monroe's.
Dad, I think we're in deep doo-doo.
Is that why everyone keeps buying all the toilet paper?
Actually, New Mexico culture is rich. Plus, Monroe's has red chili, green chili, and the best customers in the world to go with it.
Boy, Dad, you must really love our customers.
I sure do, just like I love you, Stella.
Hey, what about me?
Of course you too, Ava.
Treat yourself to a delicious Monroe's meal. See Monroe's menu at monroeschili.com. Then call in your order to Monroe's on Osuna at 881-4224 or Monroe's downtown at 242-1111 for carryout or free delivery.
To a patient with High Desert Hospice, something as simple as a caring touch, a smile, a prayer, or even just physical presence can bring comfort beyond measure.
I offer caring, comfort, and support to patients and families at a very trying time in their lives. Making a difference is a wonderful blessing, both to them and to me.
Discover just how easy and fulfilling volunteering with High Desert Hospice can be. Go to highdeserthospice.care. That's highdeserthospice.care and click on volunteer.
Serving you and your family day and night. Call Bosky when you want it done right. For heating and cooling, plumbing and more. 24/7 we'll be at your door.
Locally grown, locally owned. Bosky Heating and Cooling. A portion goes back into the community. 444-7200.
For quality service like a breath of fresh air.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are having a discussion today about everything Paul Gessing knows, which is about 100 times more than I know. And Paul, I don't know how you keep track of all of this. I mean, you're right on top of all the socioeconomic issues. You're on right on top of, you know, civic concerns and things going on. You know who the candidates are. You have seen what's going on among the people that are running for state offices. For example, the Republican Party has instituted the Respect New Mexico.
Yep.
They've not been talking about the Republicans versus Democrats. In fact, they've been talking about the opposite. They've been talking about cooperation. They've been talking about making the welfare of the citizens of New Mexico the central focus, not politics. I find it to be a very interesting position.
It will be interesting to see how that particular marketing campaign and kind of campaign platform for Republican candidates works out when people go to the polls in November. We know New Mexico's been a blue state for the better part of 90 years. We have a chart that we use. 60 of those 90 years, so 90 years from now, essentially, so we're talking about FDR in the White House. That's how long we're going back. But 60 of those 90 years have been Democrat governors. And then over 80, like something like 82 and 84 of those years have been either Democratic House and Democratic Senate. So overwhelming majorities of New Mexico's history. And the legislature's the most powerful here in New Mexico. People often say, well, Governor so-and-so didn't do a good job. Well, Governor so-and-so didn't have a legislature behind him or her to get what they actually wanted done. They might be able to veto something, but it's the legislature that makes the laws. And in New Mexico, we've been basically a one-party state for at least the last 90 years of our history. And that's just a fact that we need to realize. And all 112 of those folks are up, and Respect New Mexico's trying to unify Republicans under some kind of banner of basic concepts. I applaud the concept no matter who is doing it. I think voters have enough to keep track of, enough information. They tend to, unfortunately, and this is just a general thing I have with voters in general, is they get very passionate and worked up over who's in the White House and who they're voting for that office, and they completely forget about races like the legislature that are going to really more impact their own day-to-day lives. It's the legislature that makes the economic policies in New Mexico. And let's just say that the legislature hasn't done a really very solid, a very good job for most of New Mexico's history. There's reasons we're at the bottom of so many of the issues that we want to be at the top on, and economic growth, unemployment rate, educational performance, public safety, all those things drive from the legislature. And Respect New Mexico's trying to add a different voice to that, and I applaud them for doing that.
For people that don't know, between the legislature and the state senate, we have 112 positions that are all up for reelection November 3rd. And when do the polls open for early voting? Is that around the 12th of October?
I think it's closer to the 17th, but there's always the clerk's office downtown you can go to a week in advance. And of course, people are applying for absentee ballots and record numbers as well. By all means, do that. I don't think people should be fearful to show up for early voting. I always recommend and always have early voting. It is the simplest, least painful way, least time-consuming way to go vote. You wait around till election night, and who knows what could happen. You'd be waiting in line for hours and hours. I think voting by mail and even in these boxes that they're going to set up is okay. But I really do. There's something satisfying about getting your little sticker that says I voted and seeing your ballot go into the machine and having the number go from 118 to 119 or whatever it is. So my recommendation is do early voting. And if you do it kind of at the very beginning of the day or kind of in these off hours, chances are really good you're going to be one of the few, if not the only person.
Oh, that's exactly how it is. I go to a polling place in Corrales. And by the way, the web is saying October 17th, which is a Saturday, through October 31st, which is also a Saturday. Those are the early voting dates. I'm going to go down October 17th. I'm telling you, I'm not going to procrastinate. I'm going to make sure I cast my vote. And I want to appeal to everybody, please get registered to vote.
Yep.
Please get registered to vote. If you are young, if you are, you know, you just turned 18 years old, you need to get registered. You need to be voting.
Absolutely.
And you'll just be blessed. You'll bless a lot of other people. It's kind of like, too, I want to mention the census. That literally took less than 5 minutes to fill out online. Please fill out the census. That helps all of us. It's something that, you know, is just really important. They don't ask you anything that's invasive or that you need to keep confidential, and we really need to make sure that we do that. Steve, we have a caller. Is that what you're telling me?
Actually, no. I had a quick comment on what you were talking about getting out and voting. One of the other things I would encourage our listeners to do, and it wouldn't surprise me if both of you guys did this, when you go to vote, bring your minor children with you. So they are encouraged and educated about the ease of the process so that when they are able to vote, they watched mom and dad do it.
Yeah, you can fill out the bubbles. And of course, that's the voice of Steve Ryman. He's the producer of our show. Yep. It's kind of like the voice of God, Steve, once in a while when we're talking over here and all of a sudden they hear Steve, please turn down your microphone.
Not as much thunder and kind of, he needs to go an octave lower and then he can maybe plausibly go for the God level voice.
But, well, one of the things I appreciate about Steve is that he reads the show notes and he frequently makes a lot of very, interesting, clever suggestions. Steve's also helps put together some graphics and some quotes for us that we post. We've already put together a quote today. Steve's put together for Paul. We try to do that because we want people to focus on, look, this is not a big laborious thing. Showing up to vote, like I know my polling place down in Corrales, I am literally going to be there for less than 10 minutes from the time I pull in the parking lot, vote, and drive out. That's how well that precinct is run, and they just get you in and out. And they're very kind. They're very nice. I'm amazed at the people that just volunteer for that, Paul. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate them. But we need everybody to get educated and vote. And you don't have to agree with everything we're saying. We're just trying to provide information. We're not... We feel like sometimes we can have some pretty good discussions about it, but it's never an argument. And Paul, I want to go back to what you said earlier about Democrat-controlled state legislature in New Mexico for many, many years, as far back as we can even remember. But I don't remember it being that contentious. You know, we've mentioned Republican governors like Susana Martinez and Gary Johnson. And going back, I'm trying to think of some other.
Carruthers.
Gary Carruthers. Yeah.
And Dave Cargo was another Republican.
But I don't remember it being as contentious for those governors, was it?
Well, I can't speak to anybody before really Gary Johnson. I wasn't even at the Rio Grande Foundation when Gary was the governor. I do know that things got occasionally contentious with Manny Aragon and those guys, Sanchez, I forget the
Raymond
guy's name.
Sanchez.
Raymond Sanchez, yeah. But Gary was such a laid back kind of dude that I think he's personality wise able to do a lot to just mitigate against those kinds of situations. There's no doubt that social media has made things different. The amount of kind of ideological split, historically in this country, it may have been a happy, short-lived time period, but due to a variety of political calculations, the Democrats and the Republicans shared a lot of ideologies across partisan lines. Now we've had more of a sorting going on in terms of if you believe X, Y, and Z, you're clearly a Republican. If you believe A, B, and C, you're a Democrat. And so that sets things up for more contentious attitudes. No doubt President Trump is part of that equation at the national level, and that filters down. Like I said, too many people, I think, pay more attention to just what's going on in Washington, D.C. than what's going on at their state and local level. And, the difference between Washington and right here in New Mexico or whatever is, I've worked in Washington. I've worked in public policy in Washington. Rarely do you directly go home at night and see the people who your policies affect. In the same way as here in New Mexico, the legislature, you see directly that day, that night, the businesses. And we're seeing it right now with the virus and the shutdown and all those kinds of things. Those people have been clearly impacted, and they are making sure, I think, to keep their voices front and center as we have these debates over what to do about reopening New Mexico's economy or when the legislature convenes in January. And I want to make one quick point. I reiterate everything you said about voting, but the dovetailing, if you will, of voting and politics and the census is this legislature will be engaged in the redistricting process. That means that all of the lines for Congress and the legislature and who runs and where your home is and how that all shakes out is going to be driven by a very political process that will be handled by this next elected legislature. So really, the stakes are even higher than just a regular presidential year. It's because of this redistricting process that takes a decade. It's every single decade you do it, but it takes effect for the next decade.
And it's essential that you vote. I can't say that enough. Be educated. Don't just walk into a polling place and, fill out the bubbles and guess who you're voting for. Really look into it. And you can go to RioGrandeFoundation.org, one of the many places you can gather information. You can go to the Republican Party website. You can go to the Democrat Party website. Read about what the candidates have to say and what they supposedly stand
on. Don't forget the Libertarians.
I'm always fascinated with how many people say, we're going to do this, this, and this. And when you really look at it, they don't really have they're going to get a vote on the floor of the legislature or the Senate, or maybe they're going to be a U.S. congressman, a U.S. representative, or a U.S. senator, but they might push that agenda, but they're not really going to do it. And that's the way they talk when they're running for office.
Yeah, well, that's just a function of American politics. I don't think you can say you're going to do X, Y, and Z. I mean, it funnels down from, when people running for president are introduced. That's the next president of the United States, blah, blah, blah. And they may not be even close to being the next president of the United States, but that's the way they get announced. And then when I go to Washington as one of 100 members or 435 members or one of 112 legislators, this is the way we're going to do things. And I get it. Part of it is a bit of a false bravado. You've got to be able to try to make some promises. That's why the Respect New Mexico thing is an important idea, because at least that way you can say, if you have an R, or if the Democrats have their plan, a D by your name, it means you're going to try to push on these 3, 4, 5 issues. And it is very important to have that kind of unanimity. And, you know, we're seeing it right now to an extent in Washington, D.C. You know, you can't have a pledge, or you can't have unified discussions about everything when parties come together. But you've got a lot of Republicans right now who are looking at this open Supreme Court seat, and they're saying, yeah, heck yeah, we're going to move forward on this. And then you've got others who are saying, oh, I don't know if we should do this. And it's kind of nice to an extent if you have a pledge from somebody as a voter, you can say, they're gonna do this if they get into power. They're going to act this way or that way, whatever party they're a part of. And it's about marketing. It's not about really politics or ideology. It's just about trying to make a candidate for office resemble a product that you buy in the store. Grover Norquist, who's one of my heroes, Americans for Tax Reform, he has his no tax increase pledge. And we have a version at the Rio Grande Foundation, rgfnm.com/pledge if you're a candidate and you want to take the pledge for the legislature. And Grover says, you know, you buy a can of Coke and you drink Coke for all your life, and every time you have a very similar experience with that Coke and you like it and you continue to buy more. And then one day you get a rat head in the Coke and you probably are never going to buy Coke again. Just that one mistake. And that's the way it is with politics. You want to have someone brand themselves and say, I am going to be brand X, brand Y, whatever it may be. And you want them to understand that you're buying not because you like Joe Blow or whoever they are running for office, but you want to know what they're going to do for you and not to you when they get into office. And I think that is a very important approach to things. It also depersonalizes, because I hate, you know, arguing about so-and-so cares about New Mexico or doesn't care about New Mexico, or they have no integrity, they're a liar, they're this, they're that. I want to talk about, what issues do they support? Do they support the Constitution of the United States? Do they support a limited government based on constitutional principles? Or do they support whatever catches their fancy at the time, whatever lobbyist catches them in the hall, that kind of stuff? And I think you know where I stand on those issues.
We have one more segment with Paul Gessing. If you want to ask Paul a question, feel free, even if you disagree, 338-5790. Of course, area code 505. More with Paul right after these messages.
Quality, experience, personal service. Dom Garcia Realty, placing the interest of others first.
We were tenants of Dom's for 3 years. We felt that we needed to buy a house and have something we could call our own, and I don't think that would have been possible without Dom's help. Dom was amazing and made that happen. After getting our home, we've been able to modify it to make it our own. In the purchasing process, any issue arised, Dom was amazing and handled it flawlessly and way faster than expected. Once we got into the home we really liked, we were able to see those dreams and make them come true.
We are a full-service broker that includes working with buyers and sellers, renting, leasing, management, whether residential or commercial.
Dom Garcia Realty, 899-4644, 899-4644.
Se habla español.
Working in local law enforcement can be a thankless task, dealing with the best and worst of our community. Whether it's being on patrol, responding to emergency and non-emergency calls, solving crimes, traffic control, and so much more. Considering the current landscape, we're taking the month of September to encourage and support those serving in local law enforcement. We hope you'll do the same. What does it mean to you? Share a smile, a wave, an act of kindness, or a simple thank you. What does it mean to them?
It just makes me feel good that there's actually people out there already praying for me. So I love that sentiment.
To know that we have community support, that's, to me, is just the most amazing, amazing thing in the world.
This month, for Mission New Mexico,
Go to KNKT and Star 88 Facebook pages and let us know what you're doing to support local law enforcement.
Join Sheology for Chasing Vultures, a free four-week Bible study starting Tuesday, October 6th at 6:30 p.m. at the Calvary Osuna campus. Learn how to recognize things that eat away at your faith, like doubt, delay, dismay, and darkness. After the teaching each week, enjoy the Discussion Thing, a time of small group discussion based on the weekly discussion guide. Food trucks and a market featuring local vendors will be set up in the amphitheater, so come early to eat, shop, and fellowship. There's no cost to register or attend. However, space is limited. Register at calvarynm.church.
You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
I can tell you, since getting acquainted with Paul Gessing and the Rio Grande Foundation and his website, riograndefoundation.org, so R-I-O-G-R-A-N-D-E, foundation.org, I found so much more information than I even find listening to the news or reading any of our local papers. I find out a ton of information. And one of the articles that Paul is right on top of right now is the Bernalillo County Commission is about to entertain a bill. They call it the Project Labor Agreement. Paul, tell us about that.
Yeah, this is coming to a vote at Bernalillo County Commission today. So if you get the chance, please email, contact your Bernalillo County Commissioner and let them know that this Project Labor Agreement or Community Workforce Agreement, two names for the same thing, it's a bad idea. What it would do is plain and simple. It would make sure that any public works project that gets $1 or more of Bernalillo County tax money, so not city, not the state, it would have to be money from the county, but it could be a very small amount. And if that project gets that money, then they have to make union hiring. Unions get the jobs. Only union members are hired for that construction project. And 92% of the construction workers in the state of New Mexico are non-union. This would actually cause real big problems for those public works projects. Say you want to build, the Paseo Interchange as an example. That's an existing project, but if they had this in place at the time, they need a lot of workers for that. Chances are they have to hire them from Colorado, from Arizona, Texas, neighboring states that have excess workers that want to come here in that particular trade to work in New Mexico. That doesn't make any sense to import workers just because they pay the union dues and get the job. So the government should stay out of requiring unions. Doesn't mean you can't have union laborers on these jobs, and union members do work on a lot of public works projects and other construction projects around our city and around our state. But today, Bernalillo County Commission is considering voting on this, and they need to hear from you to tell them this is not a good idea. BernCo.gov, BERNCO.gov. You can find out who your county commissioner is. It's a 5-member board, and obviously all they need is 3 of those 5 to vote for it, and it becomes law.
So let me summarize a little bit, and I hope I'm not being naive in my opinions. I have absolutely nothing wrong with unions. I know that teacher unions have done a lot to help and improve education and safety for teachers. But we have rules now in New Mexico, I guess at the federal level, so all across the country, where you cannot be required to join a union. In this particular case, if there is any kind of project that's going through the county or the state, is it just the county?
Just the county.
Just the county. They would require it to be managed by a union contractor.
Right. Now, you mentioned the national law in place. That was, again, back to the Supreme Court. It's a 5-4 decision of the court that government employees do not have to join a union as a precondition of employment. These people would be working on a contract that would be handed down from the county, or, frequently contracts are let out by the state or the city or other governments. Those are still private employees, private sector workers. So in states like New Mexico, they can be required to join a union in the private sector as a condition of employment. And some grocery stores are unionized and other workforces are unionized. But the way it works, as I understand it, for construction is that you have, you know, all these workers potentially, and sometimes the unions can be the hiring agents, and they're, you know, they contact the union for the pipe fitters or whoever it is and say, we need 10 or 15 pipe fitters or something. But that doesn't mean that that's the only way to hire folks. And, you know, you can't just limit it by law to 8% of the entire construction workforce. That's all we're saying. There's no reason for government to choose one group just because they are unionized, pay union dues. And that's a simple proposition. It'll raise the cost of construction. There's no question about it. And it'll also potentially force these, businesses, force these, contractors working on these public works projects to import workers from out of state, which doesn't make sense at all.
What I'd love to see is a union contractor adhering to all their requirements, both for the job and of their union, and a non-union contractor competing on a level playing field for those jobs. That should, based on capitalistic principles, sure, drive the price down.
Yeah, and you can also put requirements in that retirement is offered, that health benefits, the days off, whatever kind of benefits you want. That can be a separate discussion. Just because someone's unionized doesn't mean they're always getting a superior work environment or that everything is great for them, and it's vice versa. You know, if you're not unionized, that doesn't mean that you're, you know, working in slave-like conditions. It really depends, and it's going to depend on a lot of different factors. And if you treat your workers well, you're going to get better workers and a better class of workers and better work done.
Short time left, Paul. Lot to cover still. San Juan County really struggling economically. They're getting ready to raise taxes.
They did raise taxes on the gross receipts by 1/8 of a cent. San Juan County is the northwesternmost county in New Mexico. Natural gas prices, natural gas is kind of the thing that drove their economy, and we've just seen a surplus of natural gas. It's great for the United States. It's great for energy security, but it stinks for the folks in the four corners of New Mexico. And then combine that with the closure impending of San Juan Generating Station, coal-fired power plant, which generates a lot of electricity for us right here. And you get a bad situation up in the four corners. And they're raising taxes because the other revenue sources they have are falling by the wayside. And what they really need is legislative help from Santa Fe, not help like welfare checks or more cash payments for people who can't find jobs, but they need... It's a beautiful area. If you ever go up to the Four Corners, San Juan County is beautiful. And they need help from Santa Fe to get our economy moving in ways that help the entire state, including certainly the Four Corners, to get back on their feet. But that's really the case for all New Mexico. We have an 11.3% unemployment rate, one of the highest rates in the country. That's mostly COVID-19 related. We've always been a state that struggled with keeping people at work, high paying jobs, all those kinds of things. So it's the short and long term. Short term, getting ourselves open, COVID-19 related, and then enacting business friendly, economically well thought out policies that make our state attractive for investment.
Michelle Lujan Grisham inherited a $2 billion surplus. Now we're $1 billion in the hole. Did I understand that correct?
That is as I understand it as well. And, you know, we'll know more after the election, I'm sure. Certainly as we get into January in the legislative session.
Paul Gessing, thanks so much for joining us today on ABQ Connect.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Enjoyed it.
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.